The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Southern Living. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the March 2026 issue of Southern Living magazine. Today, we will hear the back page of the journal magazine, which is called Southern Journal, an essay by Rick Bragg that ends every issue. And then we'll go on to hear a little bit about the Good Morning America co-anchor Robin Roberts and women's basketball and what she's got to do with that, which is very interesting. All right. Now we're on the back page of the magazine, and this is Southern Journal, which ends each magazine. It's an essay by Rick Bragg, B-R-A-G-G. And this is entitled The Lost Art of Meatloaf. Why is it getting impossible to find this classic comfort food? And here's a picture, a caricature of Rick Bragg. And he is painting as an artist, since it's called The Lost Art of Meatloaf. He's painting a picture of a meatloaf. And he's holding a pan in his left hand and the paintbrush in his right hand. And on the foreground, where there might be paints, there appear to be little bowls of sauces and a bottle of ketchup. And Rick Bragg is smiling, and he's wearing a brown beret tilted to the side, sort of like a French chef vibe there. He's got long brown hair. He's balding, and the hair is long on the sides and back. And it's kind of a sparse mustache and goatee and then beard, a full beard. And he's wearing a painter's smock, a white painter's smock over a red shirt, green scarf around his neck, a grass green scarf around his neck, tomato red shirt. And that matches the tomato red that he's sauce that he's painting over the top of the meatloaf that he has there. He has on blue jeans, brown laced shoes. He's in an artist's studio. There are just frames against on the floor and against the wall around him. And on the easel, as we said, is a painting of meatloaf that takes up almost the entire sheet, the entire canvas. And it's a little bit of purplish, bluish, kind of like a cloudy day that's a little bit blurred on the top and bottom. I have held my tongue as long as I could, but I just can't stand it anymore. How is it that in this region of the country that's so utterly crammed with great chefs that there's barely enough space for them to move around in their fashionable clogs, there's not one decent plate of meatloaf to be had? Maybe at one point they remembered how. Perhaps somewhere deep in their minds, buried under all that apathy, there's a recipe that doesn't bitterly disappoint. But it might be a lost art. The great meatloaf maestros have died out. Like all of those guys who used to be able to find water by walking around with a forked stick. I think modern-day cooks believe the term meatloaf means it's supposed to be a literal loaf of meat, just doused in a thin layer of ketchup. They bake it so hard it'll bend a fork, and then it tastes about like particle board. Try this once dependable dish anywhere in the South and take your chances. you most likely end up with a dry slab of something that closely resembles the heel of a worn-out boot. Let me explain how this happens. First off, ground beef does not bake well. Cooks form it into a big fat log and then seem somehow surprised that it has to be almost incinerated before the middle gets done. Nobody wants it served medium rare, not even the French. Second, the finished product is just meat. Oh, the more pretentious folks will grind prime cuts of Kobe beef, lamb chops, and unicorns, and season it with a spice gathered only on the slopes of faraway mountains under a full moon. But when it's done, it's still a boot heel of beef with a little ketchup. Some try to cover up their mistake with a slop of gravy. But if you can't succeed at making meatloaf, why do you assume you can handle gravy? The most maddening thing of all is that some people don't seem to mind. They are now so accustomed to their treadmill of mundane dinner options that even bad meatloaf is better than none at all. But some of us can remember. My granny, Velma Bragg, had to feed an army every day, not just her own family, but any number of cousins and hangers-on. A pork chop can only be carved so many ways, but a meatloaf, that can extend to the horizon. She'd take a pound of hamburger, the cheap, fatty kind, and knead it by hand, combining it with a loaf or so of stale white bread. She'd mix in salt, black pepper, a chopped hot Spanish onion, and, if she had any, some finely diced green onion. Then she'd work in the ketchup thoroughly until it permeated and flavored the entire thing. The precise amount is lost to time, but it was not a lot, my mother believes, just a half cup or less, which gave it a beautiful color when baked. Why would anyone cook a tasteless hunk of meat and then try to fancy it up with a smear of ketchup? Asks Mama. Then she would season an ancient iron skillet with bacon grease and spoon her mixture in, no more than a few inches deep. It cooked faster that way and never, ever dried out. But the secret was the bread ratio. It created a crisp outer layer and a creamy inside. To serve it, she'd cut it into wedges like cornbread. You'd think that anybody could do it, but evidently they can't. And that is our Southern Journal for the month of March, listeners. Now we're moving on to She's Got Game, Robin Roberts on the Rise of Women's Basketball. This is an article by Rebecca Shorewin, and it's Rebecca and Shore is a separate name, and then Wynn, W-I-N-N, is our last name, listeners. And it starts with a full-page photo of the Good Morning America co-anchor Robin Roberts at Pass Christian High School, where she fell in love with basketball. And Robin Roberts is standing in a gym. There is a royal blue curtain in the background. And there's some... the cushions that buffer people. I don't know why I can't think of the name of this now, but it is tomato red with royal blue and the words Pass Christian. It's the high school buffers there in front of that, what appears to be a stage. No, there are curtains and there's a basket I just see now above her. So we're in a gym and the basket is at the top. a regulation basket and a clear board. And in the foreground, Robin Roberts, the Good Morning America co-anchor, is standing wearing jeans and a white t-shirt and smiling. She's got golden hair and golden skin. She's African American. She's got one hand on her hip and the other is holding a basketball. And she's got bangle bracelets on that wrist that's holding the basketball there of like a sea color, sea blue, with a ring to match and a couple of rings on her pointer finger and her ring finger. And her other hand is wearing a watch and another ring on her left ring finger, maybe a diamond ring. And she's wearing white sneakers and a brown belt. While it's been only 4 years since the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament was officially given the March Madness branding, female athletes have been making monumental strides in the game and in their communities for decades. These six Southern women prove that the real MVPs are inspiring the next generation, both on and off the court. In April 2024, Robin Roberts was courtside at the women's NCAA basketball title game between the universities of Iowa and South Carolina when a photographer snapped a candid shot. The Good Morning America, GMA co-anchor, wasn't so much watching them play as she was gazing dreamily upon a scene. I had this expression on my face, like a proud mama bear looking out at these athletes, looking around the court, at the crowd, the celebrities that were there. Roberts, now 65, says of the matchup, which drew the most viewers of a women's college basketball game on record. Back when I played, we had one or two players who excelled, she says. Here, you're looking at 10 players on the floor at a time that are just exceptional athletes. And for them to be embraced as they were just warmed my heart. Born in Tuskegee, Alabama, to a social worker and a pilot with the Tuskegee Airmen, Roberts eventually settled with her family in Pass Christian, Mississippi, just down the Gulf Coast from Biloxi. Before she became a household name, she found her audience on the basketball court. If her team drew one at all, it was the early 1970s, and Title IX, the landmark federal law that prohibited sex-based discrimination in education programs, had just passed. I can remember being in junior high, and all of a sudden, they're like, here's a basketball, she says. Our team uniforms were our PE outfits with numbers taped on the back. Before you conjure a mental image of Roberts and her teammates plodding about in the half court, barely breaking a sweat, let the record show that was not the case. I'm not that old. I did cross half court, Robert says with a laugh, referencing a bygone era in which women were thought to be, quote, too genteel to play full court, unquote. And listeners, we've got a photo here of Robin Roberts in front of a tour bus, the TV personality with the Pass Christian Pirates. The Pass Christian Pirates team, a women's team, and they are all sorts of women, extremely diverse and all happy and strong and smiling, and four of them are peeking out the windows of the bus above the five women who are standing around Robin Roberts, and she is the second from the right. And she's standing there with her arms on the shoulder of one of the girls. And they've got on white uniforms with royal blue sides, royal blue panel on the sides and bottom of their shorts. And that is trimmed in red, just thin, a thin red line. And that's also around the cuffs where the sleeves would be, but they're sleeveless, of course, and around their V-necks, too. And the bus is a matching royal blue and that also fire engine red color. And along the side of the bus, it says, committed to excellence. And on the bottom is Roberts, playing for Southeastern Louisiana University when she was younger. And she's grabbing the ball while her guard is guarding her there. And she's in action there, looking fierce. Okay, but other than our families and friends, there was really nobody else in town that would come to the game, she says. I can still see my mom in the stands, leading the cheer. 2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits. In spite of that tepid turnout, Roberts is eager to mention that Southern women's basketball has a tradition of excellence, with perennial championship contenders like Mississippi's Delta State University, where Lucia Harris, one of her personal heroes, starred in the 70s. Roberts, also a standout in bowling and tennis, scored an athletic scholarship to Southeastern Louisiana University, where she put numbers on the basketball scoreboard that still rank among the program's best. Although she thought about going pro, the call from the sidelines was louder. I used to dream of being at Wimbledon one day. When I got there, finally, I didn't have a tennis racket in my hands. I had a microphone, she recalls, referencing her 15-year tenure at ESPN. To Roberts, the insights she gained as an athlete have everything to do with her achievements off the court. For generations, men have used the skills they learned in playing sports to be successful in business, she says. It's so important for young women to be involved in athletics. So, given her platform, does she feel an obligation to push for more coverage of women's sports? You know what? Yes, she says, pausing for a moment. But I don't have to do it much anymore. Now, at GMA, it's automatic when someone wins the national championship to have the team or the coach on. It used to be like, well, what's the story behind them? Do they have a hook? You know, female athletes had to have something special. Now, it's just because of their greatness, of their being exceptional, says Roberts, with the mama bear pride evident in her voice. And listeners, Breaking Glass is the Pat Summitt story, and it will stream on Hulu and Hulu on Disney in this country, in the U.S., I don't know where you're listening from, but in the U.S. in March. And here are some other exceptional female athletes. Tania Latson from the University of South Carolina. And there's a photo of her jumping high in the air with a basketball. It makes sense that Tania Latson dreamed of playing hoops at the University of Connecticut, UConn. And any girl who grew up watching and loving basketball over the past 20 years probably had the Huskies tacked up on her vision board. But UConn never came calling. Latson started her college career at Florida State University, where she played 3 seasons and led the country in scoring as a junior before entering the transfer portal last offseason and emerging as a Gamecock. She was ready for a bigger stage and a higher level of play, and the University of South Carolina under the legendary Don Staley was a perfect fit. Plus, she wanted to stay in the region. My competitive spirit comes from the South. Here, you gotta come with an edge. It's really good competition, really good coaches. It's an attitude, says Latson. She grew up in an itinerant military family, honing her skills on playgrounds in Mississippi, on army bases and prep school teams in Hawaii, and on four high school courts across Florida and Georgia. If there are any generalizations to be made about how different areas raise different types of players, Latson is qualified to make them. Play in the South is physical, she says. It's elite competition. Her transfer to South Carolina reunited her with high school teammate Raven Johnson and youth league teammate Joyce Edwards. In fact, it was Johnson who beckoned her friend to Columbia by raising the prospect of winning an NCAA championship together. The welcome from the South Carolina FAMs, as Coach Staley calls their fandom, provided the perspective Latson needed to know she'd made the right choice. And listeners, the FAMs is spelled F-A-M as in Mary, as Coach Staley called their fandom. We have one fan, a little girl, who makes us bracelets with our names. She dresses up every game in a jersey and a headband and writes us little things, says Latson. I keep those in my locker just to know I'm doing it for more than myself and my team. Madison Booker, the University of Texas at Austin. There is nothing off about Madison Booker's off seasons. In 2025, that time was mostly spent in gym somewhere, training in Colorado, representing the national team in Chile, and competing in a tournament in Canada with her Texas Longhorns, plus a sprinkling of other appearances due to her growing profile. Ask her about some of the happiest memories from that whirlwind summer, and catfish ranks high on the list. Whenever she can, Booker goes back home to Ridgeland, Mississippi, where the dish is a non-negotiable. It's made by my auntie. No fries, no sides, just straight catfish and my Louisiana hot sauce, she said. For Booker, these trips back to her aunt are about more than comfort food. They give her a chance to think about the legacy she wants to leave behind for the state that raised her. Mississippi gets overlooked with regard to education and health care. We're at the bottom of things, she says. But the South has always had a grit and grind, get it out of the mud work ethic. Or, excuse me, listeners, that's get out the mud. Get out the mud work ethic. She points to the camps and mentorship efforts of Mississippi State University player Josh Hubbard, who grew up one town over from her, as inspiration. Booker also knows she has an opportunity to influence in a way that a male athlete cannot. The 6'1 forward, who, as a kid, modeled her game after stars like Kevin Durant and Rajon Rondo, believes there's a different magic that happens when female athletes are in the spotlight. As a woman, I can't go out there and dunk two hands on the rim. That's not going to be me, she says. Girls seeing somebody they can play like or be better than, that's going to be good for the sport. Kara Lawson, Duke University. When a video of Kara Lawson talking to her players went viral 2 years into her role as head coach of the Duke University women's basketball team, she thought she was just passing on a useful bit of wisdom she'd learned over time. We all wait in life for things to get easier, she said in the 2022 speech. Most people think that it's going to get easier, Life is going to get easier. Basketball is going to get easier. School is going to get easier. It never gets easier. What happens is you become someone that handles hard stuff better. The message stirred something in people well beyond the sports world. It spawned a lot of letters and emails. Before, if I got stopped in public, it was someone saying, "I'm from Tennessee. I enjoyed watching you play." Or, "I watched you on ESPN," she recalls. But you go from that to hearing, "Coach, I just wanted to tell you how much of an impact your speech had on me. I lost my mom 3 years ago and was in a bad place, and it woke me up." Or, "My son was diagnosed with cancer, and it woke me up." This moment allowed her to step into a legacy that was 2 decades in the making. When Lawson was a student at the University of Tennessee, legendary coach Pat Summitt saw something in the guard beyond athleticism. She saw a leader. Summitt implored her to take a public speaking course. Lawson recalls, "I begrudgingly did it. One, because she was my coach, and two, because I knew she was right." Today, Lawson has seen Summitt's vision through with an impressive playing career, during which she earned a WNBA championship and an Olympic gold medal, plus a coaching resume that includes the Boston Celtics, Duke University, and, most recently, the women's national team. But while her reputation as a winner is backed by the numbers, Lawson lights up most when speaking about using her platform to impact those around her. She keeps her inbox open to members of the Duke community who are seeking a bit of guidance and meets with those who take her up on the offer. "You can't be part of the community and never give to it," she says. "There are going to be times I have to take from the community. But there are just as many times I have to give to it." And listener, there's also featured in this article, just so we know, is Izzy Higginbottom from Oklahoma State University, Renia Kelly from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And that's it. Unfortunately, we don't have time for their stories because we've run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living. We hope you enjoyed listening. And we hope you'll join us next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Southern Living is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. So long till next time.